Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Join us on a journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 239, Incident at Lone Point. Read by Mitchell Two. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, role-playing might be more than a game.
Yeah, I'm still coming. I know I'm late. I'll be there. Really, you're lucky I could even make it. Unlike some people, I have a job.
I jabbed at the red end call icon on the dashboard screen so hard my knuckles snapped. Larkin, our lore master, had become a real pain. I hadn't even been all that interested in LARPing until she strong-armed me into it. Sure, I had done a weekend with one of the more popular combat-heavy stories, but I discovered I wasn't really into roughing it in a fake medieval camp in the middle of a mosquito-infested forest. I also hate porta-potties. Plus, being persistently jabbed with a foam sword by some guy who fancies himself a paladin was more annoying than fun. But Larkin, who I had met at an anachronism festival last summer, had somehow managed to convince me to try again with her hybrid medieval sci-fi fantasy LARP called Terra Incognita, which she was the creator of and insisted was a one-of-a-kind. Sometimes I think she cast a spell on me. Why else would I have left work early to drive out to the middle of nowhere on a perfectly good Friday afternoon? Anyway, that's how I found myself on a remote gravel road headed to some old summer camp that even the Boy Scouts had abandoned. The bright flags of the Nine Worlds and Orland Earthers hanging from temporary poles were the first hint I had arrived at the right place. The second was the abandoned vehicles lining the sides of the road, forcing me to park further away from the trailhead than I would have liked. I pulled my heavy backpack from the trunk, hoping the 3-star accommodations Larkin claimed to be available were more than a bunch of moldy canvas tents with access to a backhouse. The excuse for a trail leading away from the makeshift parking lot did little to build my confidence. Wheel marks in the grass and broken branches evidenced the path of multiple trips with a wagon. At least my intentionally tardy arrival meant that I wouldn't have to be part of the setup crew. I walked along the trail until I could hear music and voices, then turned a corner and found myself entering a large clearing containing a group of surprisingly well-maintained cabins. A sign, which looked like an afterthought, hammered into the ground at the trail's end, welcomed visitors to Lone Point Wilderness Cabins. The solar cells on their roof was a hopeful sign that this weekend would be, at worst, a glamping experience, although I suspected Larkin would probably have strict rules around the use of electricity during roleplay. The visible lack of outhouses promised indoor plumbing, another hint that possibly Larkin had been telling the truth for once. I followed the voices and music around the side of the closest cabin and found our faux medieval encampment complete with moldy tents. A hand-painted sign directed me to one of the log cabins, which had been designated as a changing area. Larkin, predictably already dressed in her black and gold cloak, noticed my arrival, broke away from the group, and raced over to me. She pulled her hood down, revealing gray skin and her large, fake, alien eyes, which were always so well done that they were creepy. In the game, she played Envy, the Primus Pilus of the alien cohort.
"Antigone, Avenger of Orland," she called, then grabbed me by the elbow and rushed me into the change cabin.
"You know the rules, Avery. You need to be in character when you can be seen by the group,"
she scolded.
Hey, I just got... It spoils the ambiance, Larkin added.
I was going to protest, but didn't want to start the weekend off on a bad note, and instead rushed to change into my forest green tunic and leather vest. My preferred character is a mage or healer or something similar. As I already mentioned, I don't like full boffer combat, but Larkin had somehow convinced me to be an Orland ranger. So most of the time, I hide in the forest and shoot Nerf arrows, but I was getting a vibe from Larkin that this weekend would be different. Last event, I had knocked more than a few points off several Nine World Centurions from a safe distance.
Come on, come!
Larkin impatiently urged, almost pushing me through the door as I reached for my bow and quill of Nerf arrows, which I had bought off Etsy for more than I wanted to admit. Outside, we hurried over to the waiting group. Larkin had managed to harangue about 24 people into spending their hard-earned time off into acting out a new chapter in her ongoing saga. This weekend, the Earthers had a definite numbers advantage over the Nine World aliens.
Okay, everyone, Larkin yelled. Listen up. We are at stage point Omicron in the Earthland of Aragon. Sophie will be out of the game tonight. She'll be an NPC and our marshal. So if you have any game mechanics or story questions, you can ask her. She'll have a tablet with the official game database. Now, if you haven't kept up on the website, a lot has happened since our last event. Tobis and his fellow knights from the Order of Orland have discovered the Nine Worlders' shuttlecraft and smashed its controls, so the Nine Worlds' expeditionary force can't use it. They are now trying to get to their backup landing site, where there is another cohort of alien celestial guards. The Order of Orland is trying to cut them off. So, we'll be in the woods tonight. The moon is full, but we have lanterns if you prefer. Remember, lanterns will make it easy to be spotted and attacked. Also, I have a surprise.
Larkin looked at me pointedly.
Antigon, the Avenger of Orland, turns out to be an off-worlder sympathizer and uses her magic arrows on her fellow Earthers to give her alien friends time to escape.
There were a few boos and catcalls from the Earthers, and thumbs up from the small but now energized group of Nine Worlders. Although I knew Larkin fairly well, I hadn't played with her faction before. Changing sides would probably mean some close combat, and I hadn't signed up for that, so I was feeling put out. I thought I had been clear about close combat when Larkin recruited me.
I'm not sure I like this. I complained. I'm not into the whole boffer thing. It's a critical turning point in the story, Larkin explained, ignoring my protest. So far, all Earthers have treated the stranded Nine Planets expedition like mindless, invading monsters. Between our last event and now, Antigon got trapped in a collapsed mine with Aegil, the pious prior of the first cohort of the Nine Worlds. To survive, they had to learn to cooperate and come to accept each other as intelligent beings. Antigon also learns the Nine Worlds expedition cannot go back to their home world and don't have enough fuel to find another habitable planet, so they are stranded in Earth orbit. A rock slide opens a narrow passage which allows the two to get out and go their own way. Antigon has been thinking about the plight of the Nine Worlders. During tonight's encounter, she decides it's wrong to drive the aliens out. That's the backstory for Antigon's apparent betrayal. I wanted to shake things up a bit so they're not so black and white. You know, it adds some nuance to the story.
There were a few murmurs of support and nodding heads. Several friends in the Earther group were looking at me expectantly.
Will I have to wear that sticky gray makeup?
I said. Lacking the nerve to admit I didn't want to do close combat. I hate putting that much stuff on my skin. It makes my face break out.
Antigon just changes sides. She doesn't transform into a Nine Worlder,
Larkin explained. Sure, until your story needs a new twist.
I shot back, and I get infected by some DNA-altering virus which changes me into an alien.
Then you won't need the makeup, Larkin joked. Okay, people, back here in 2 hours to start. If you haven't already picked up your character sheet and cards, go see Sophia. She'll be in the main cabin for the next hour. And that's also where we'll have our meals. Also, we still need another volunteer to help cook.
As the group broke up, Sophia threaded her way over to me. She had already put on the white headband, designating her as a game marshal.
You bummed about having to be a marshal this weekend? I asked. How come we didn't draw straws like usual?
Sophia forced a thin smile.
Larkin just sprung that on us. We didn't know ahead of time.
Sophia and I had become friends outside of the LARP, and although Larkin didn't readily admit it, she was responsible for at least half of the storyline and did most of the organization for our events.
She cut my ideas from this weekend, too, Sophia complained. I didn't know about your character's change of heart. Here's your updated sheet. You were doing well, but my guess is your character is going to take a lot more hits than usual. I heard John Avery say he was going to play Tobis as being outraged over the defection, so watch out for him. You know how he can get carried away when he goes into full boffer mode.
That's why I never wanted to play a nine-worlder, I admitted. Thanks, I'll try to keep away from him.
We both stood for a minute, watching Larkin, in her alien makeup, explain something to a group of nine-worlders and hand out silver Nerf guns and lightsabers. The sun was setting when I got back to the staging area. Everyone else was there, and Larkin was in character, so Sophia was describing the storyline for the evening.
Okay, nine-worlders, the clearing beside the lake is your second landing site, she explained. Your team needs to complete the puzzle I laid out on the table before the spirit of the forest will grant you entry to its lands. Earthers, you will be hiding in the trees. Antigone, will confront her fellow Earthers when they first attack.
I could see John in his plastic and foam armor glance my way and smile menacingly. Sophia looked at her watch and signaled for us to start. We Earthers headed into the forest to hide, and, as Larkin suggested, there was just enough light from the full moon to make it possible to find our way without lamps. I tried to avoid John, but in the gloom, his costume was too similar to the other knights to tell him apart. The forest was in reality just an area of trees where the undergrowth had been removed, presumably to make it safer for young campers to wander through without getting lost. It was situated between the cabins and a cleared area on the shore of a small lake. We walked until we could just hear the lapping of water along the lake shore and hid behind the larger trees. My ranger costume, bought online from someone who was more particular about look than utility, did little to insulate me against the early spring night. I made a note to buy an overcoat. I soon found myself shivering. It seemed to be taking forever for the nine-worlders to solve the puzzle and get going. I was almost ready to call it quits and run to my cabin for a coat, which I knew was against the rules, when I heard faint voices and saw ghostly shadows cast by the moon moving amongst the trees.
Forbear, he no further!
I heard John call out.
Who it that wishes to pass?
Earther, thou hast no right to forbear us, Larkin challenged, and that was the cue.
The nine-worlders turned on their flashlights, come lightsabers, and slashes of blue light started to probe the trees.
Attack! Never let them pass!
John commanded, and everyone, except me, jumped out to confront the nine-worlders. Yelling and the dull thump of foam boffers broke the silence. I waited, as scripted, for the Earthers to start to beat back the nine-worlders, then jumped into the chaos, bow drawn, and cried,
Forbear, Earthers! These foreign people are not our foe!
I know that sounded lame.
We had spent an entire weekend trying to learn Shakespearean English. In the heat of action, I had forgotten most of it, so that was my best attempt. My appearance, as planned, drew attention to me, allowing the Nine-Worlders to slip away. I unleashed a Nerf arrow at the closest knight. He groaned in an overdramatic fashion and fell to the ground. John rounded on me and charged.
"Traitor, I shall dispatch thou!"
he yelled and brought his boffer sword down on my shoulder.
"Hey, that hurt!"
I cried. John grinned and hit me again.
"Stop!" I screamed. "You're hurting me! Marshall!"
I cried and managed to dodge the next blow before Sophia ran over to see what was going on.
"This doofus is hitting me as hard as he can!" I jumped back as John tried to jab me again.
"You're supposed to drop to the ground when you take a hit," he complained.
"Yeah, but according to the story, you miss me and I hit you."
"Where does it say that?"
Sophia pulled out her tablet and began to scan through the weekend script. Cold, shivering, angry, and now sure the idiot had bruised my shoulder, I decided I had had enough.
"I quit," I said, and turned to head back to the cabins.
"Larkin, Avery's quit the LARP," I heard Sophia radio as I walked away. It took me less than 5 minutes to cram my stuff into a backpack, throw a coat over my costume, and head back down the path to the road. By the time the cabin lights had disappeared behind me, my anger began to wane, and I found myself alone on a dark trail. Feeling like I was too far along to be convinced to go back, I stopped to catch my breath. It was then I noticed the trees were so thick, almost no moonlight reached the ground, and I couldn't see more than a few feet ahead or behind. Digging in my pack for my headlamp, I realized that in my haste, I had left it back on my bunk. But there was no way I was going back to get it, so I shouldered my pack and began to pick my way along, feeling the ground with my feet so I wouldn't trip on a root. After a few steps, I thought I heard something, stopped, and looked around, but only the rustle of leaves in a light breeze greeted my ears. I'm not what I would call afraid of the dark. I'm also not the type of person who'd voluntarily walk back to their car in the dead of night along a wilderness trail. So, my heart almost leapt out of my chest when several twigs snapped somewhere off to the side. I began to run, tripped on something, and found myself laying face down in the musty dirt. There was rustling, and a shadowy form slipped out of the woods, blocking the trail ahead. Frantic, I struggled back to my feet, deciding I'd rather endure another day of LARPing than be consumed by some strange, wild animal.
"Avery, stop. It's just me, Larkin. Sophia told me you were quitting. We took a shortcut from the lake to head you off before you left."
She was the last person I wanted to see. Her familiar cloak was silhouetted by a weird blue light, and she was accompanied by two other LARPers I didn't recognize in silver Nine Worlds jumpsuits. Both sported the same creepy, large-eye prosthetics as Larkin.
"You and your pals there freaking scared me, Larkin."
She stepped forward, stopping only a hand's width from my face.
"Avery, you can't quit. The whole weekend is built around your character."
I resisted the urge to step back.
"I don't care. I'm not going to stay if I have to do boffer combat. John and his pals are crazy. Should I show you the bruise he gave me? You'll have to find somebody else to be Antigone. I'm out of here."
As I tried to push by Larkin, her two companions closed in on either side and grabbed me by my arms.
"Hey, leave me alone."
I tried to shake them off, but they wouldn't let go.
"Larkin, tell your goons to let me go. You can't hold me here against my will."
"You need to understand what's at stake here, Avery," Larkin said.
"What's at stake? It's just a game, which will probably go better if everyone wants to be here. And I don't. Now let me go."
Larkin's two friends tightened their grip when I tried to shake them loose again.
You need to see something first. Then, if you want, we'll walk you back to your car.
Knowing Larkin wouldn't accept no, I finally agreed. She led the way with her friends flanking me on either side. I wondered if they'd try to stop me if I changed my mind.
Hey, where are you going?
I said, after realizing we were not heading in the right direction. It appeared Larkin was taking us down an animal path, which led away from both the camp and the road. She ignored my question and kept walking in silence. We picked our way along for about 10 minutes, me protesting the whole way, demanding that Sophia join us, before the path came to a large mound which was made too recently for the trees and shrubs to have colonized. There was a soft green glow coming from the other side and low humming, which slowly rose and fell in pitch. Larkin stopped at its base and looked around, checking the forest. Seemingly satisfied, she turned right. As we rounded the base of the mound, the glow and hum grew louder. I involuntarily shivered. The air temperature seemed to have dropped a couple of degrees, and something like mist or fog was beginning to form close to the ground, getting thicker and higher as we proceeded. Finally, we reached the opposite side, and I stopped dead in my tracks and stared.
What is this?
I exclaimed, flabbergasted by the scene in front of me.
Wow, you really went overboard on the FX. Where did you get the money?
Were we supposed to discover this alien base or something? It's not in the story outline. There was a hole, or more like an entrance, cut into the mound. It was the source of the ghostly green glow and sound. Larkin turned and winked at me with one of her big, creepy alien eyes, then walked into the entrance. She had winked. I mean, how can you make a rubber prosthetic wink? I hesitated, but her two friends pushed me forward.
Hey, no need for that. I thought we weren't in character,
I complained as they ushered me inside. It took a few seconds for my eyes to adjust to the bright interior. Then I found myself in what I can only describe as some kind of weird control room. Images of the camp and the rest of our group in the forest talking, no doubt waiting while Larkin resolved the Avery issue, were somehow floating in midair. I could clearly hear what everyone was saying, and not sure how that was even possible. The camera, or cameras, seemed to be able to float through the group, picking up individuals without anyone noticing. Our LARP character names flashed on the displays as the camera floated by.
What is this? Micro drones? I demanded. You can't record us without our consent.
It's in the fine print of the membership rules, Avery, and it applies across the known universe. Larkin laughed. It's a standard clause, and I love the hubris. You people know almost nothing about the universe.
Drop the alien character babble, Larkin. I just want to know what's going on.
You're not getting it, are you? It isn't babble. We are aliens.
Aren't you taking the whole role-playing thing a bit too far? I said.
I'm totally serious. We are not from this squalid little mudball. We're only here to record a reality TV show. Admittedly, we stole the idea of reality shows from you. Unfortunately, in your ignorance, you were broadcasting that garbage to the entire Stellar neighborhood. It ruined the demand for serious literary content and put me out of a job. You know, I used to direct some of the best dramas in the Orion Cygnus arm. It was my producer's idea to do a reality show where contestants, Larkin nodded at her two buddies, are in a LARP about aliens and medieval humans. They were supposed to be the stars, but for some weird reason, the audience back home took a liking to you. We can't figure out why, but every time you're on camera, our rating goes through the roof. So, you see, we can't allow you to quit.
Avery? Avery, are you okay?
At first, the voice seemed far away. My head ached, and I was lying on the ground. I'm not sure, I said, and rolled over to find Sophia and Larkin standing over me, the glare of their headlamps making me squint and shade my eyes.
We've been looking everywhere for you, Sophia explained, relief in her voice. You took off so fast from the battle, you didn't hear John apologize. I think you might have tripped on a root and knocked yourself out.
How long? I asked. How long have I been missing?
About 15 or 20 minutes.
Sophia glanced at her watch.
That's strange. It's already 4 a.m. I could have sworn it was only 2.
I guess time flies when you're having fun,
Larkin, hovering behind Sophia, suggested.
I'm sure Avery is okay.
Sophia knelt down and opened a first aid kit.
We should really take you into town and have you checked out.
No, I'm fine, really. I protested, despite thinking Sophia was right. I just want to finish the story.
Are you sure, Avery? I thought you wanted to quit,
Sophia said, placing a bandage on my temple. No, I don't. Let's just finish before it gets light. For some reason I couldn't explain, more than anything else in the world, more than anything else I had ever wanted, I needed to finish the LARP. I just didn't understand why.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com, where you'll find Mess Hall Podcast. Join hosts Avery and Lena Cochran, and sometimes guests, as they sample, rate, and talk about fun foods. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by Pod Power. With Pod Power, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. This episode, Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us give a Pod Power shout-out to Is This For Real? Is a podcast about various facets of Black life in Edmonton. In the first season of the show, Breaking the Blue Wall, host Omar Salifu explores anti-Black racism and policing, and tells stories about policing in schools, accountability in Alberta's policing system, and the impacts of police violence on Black Edmontonians. You can listen to the podcast and read more about each episode at isthisforreal.ca. You can also support the work of these podcasters and future seasons on Patreon. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by ATB Financial. Hosted by Todd Hirsch, ATB Financial's Vice President and Chief Economist, The Future of Podcast has launched its third season. By connecting with industry leaders to uncover what's on the horizon for the things that mean the most to you, The Future of Podcast promises to give you insights to help navigate what is often an uncertain future. Explore how our economy and communities can not only brace for change, but embrace the opportunity it creates. Subscribe to The Future of in the Apple Store, Google Play, Spotify, and everywhere podcasts are found. And connect with us at atb.com/thefutureof. Makeshift Stories is released around the beginning and middle of the month. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. Audio production by Spatialized Audio. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe or follow wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivative License, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.